This is it. The legendary live band, Phish, returns to the road this summer. Phish. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, Ruoff Music Center. On sale now at LiveNation.com. Part of the Coors Light Concert Series.
This could be BBC Scream and Noise kind of thing.
Yeah, just remember that.
I've just given everyone the idea of sending that as a voice note, by the way. Please don't do that.
087-9180.
180!
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.
Hello and welcome to the Koigig Podcast. I'm Kathleen McNamee and we're back for our final two European qualifying group games against England and France. Now, before we get into the football, Karen Duggan will be joining me in a couple of minutes to get into that. I just want to address the harrowing allegations made in the joint RTE and Sunday Independent report at the weekend against three coaches from the 1990s. It's been a difficult week for Irish sport and especially those of us who have followed, supported and loved women's football. As it's an ongoing investigation, we're not going to be discussing it today, but we didn't want to ignore it either. So here's a clip from yesterday's FAI press conference where interim CEO David Carell and People and Culture Director Aoife Rafferty apologised to the women who came forward.
We asked you here because we want to directly address the allegations of historical abuse of women involved in Irish football in the 1990s. It was harrowing for me in a position of leadership of the association, as a coach in my local club, and as a parent, to hear these incredibly courageous women recount their experiences last night. I'm angry to hear that these women could have had these experiences in football. The board and the executive of the FAI are deeply shocked and appalled by these revelations. I can assure you that providing a safe environment for all involved in Irish football is our paramount consideration. These matters first came to our attention in early 2024. While we sought guidance from the authorities, we also acted swiftly in seeking an opportunity to sit with the women so that we could ensure we put them at the centre of our response.
Yes, so if you want to hear more of that press conference and more of the FAI's response to the allegations, you can find them on Off the Ball's YouTube and podcast pages. If you have something that you wish to raise, there is an independent service which is available to raise a concern, and that's for anyone within Irish football who wishes to report a serious issue anonymously. You can email football@raiseaconcern.com or phone 01 610 7929. All those details are on the FAI's website as well if you need to go back and look them up. We're going to turn our attention to the football because that's happening this week as well, and it's important that we keep talking about that side of things too. So to do that, I am joined by the one and only Captain Karen Duggan. Karen, feelings, emotions going into this week? I feel like I ask you this every time these European windows have come around and we start off optimistic, and then let's just say the optimism goes a little bit.
I don't think I ever start off optimistic. I don't know where you're getting from at all. Yeah, it's the same for me. Again, I just see these games as a chance to pit yourself against the best, a chance to see what areas we need to improve on, see how adaptable we can be. And again, we're going to have to be adaptable this week. Obviously, we'll mention it, but Katie McCabe not there for the England game, which we, you know, we so heavily rely on her. We speak about her so often. It'll be someone else's chance to step up. Am I optimistic in terms of getting points? Not particularly. Do I think that off the back of the last Sweden game that there's a bit of a platform that we can bounce off and use to kind of generate a bit of momentum, maybe not results wise, but performance wise? Yes.
So what do you think that momentum is going to look like then in the context of these games?
I guess it's going back to basics, being defensively solid. I think that revisiting the four at the back is a good thing. It gives us options going forward, that the more you practice that, the more you can not just start a game like that, but maybe seamlessly slip into it as a match goes on. And we speak about it loads. You've spoken about in the WSL, Jonas Eidevall maybe not having that in-match management and the ability to adapt. So it's a good challenge for Eileen and her management staff to maybe practice something like that. And I see it as maybe some of the younger girls or the girls who have more recently come into the squad to gel a little bit more. That's it really. I mean, again, you're just looking at the quality that England and France have. And are we going out to play expansive football and try and win the game? I don't think so. But as the girls said, going to the World Cup, these are the games you want to be playing in. These are the games that you should be getting excited about. So I hope that that's the case. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a weird time in the season for the girls as well. I think they'll be really excited getting back into camp, but whether they're at their peak will probably be unlikely. But the other teams are in the same boat as well. So that'll be interesting to see if their levels are the same as when we played them earlier in the year. Like I said, in the Aviva, at the time I was so impressed with England, just their game management, their touch, how they move the ball. And hopefully we've learned something from those games. That we can now bring into these games, and we can remain more competitive in those games for longer. We were praising the girls for the second half performance against England, and rightly so. It was really, really good. But the game was over as a contest really at that point. So it's, can we remain in the game longer? And then that, just being solid and maybe not conceding early, that's going to be really, really important, because when we do get to that playoff, yeah, we'll be playing a lower ranked team. But if we continue this trend of maybe conceding a little bit too early in games and finding it hard to fight back into the games, we know that that's possibly a weakness of ours. So instead of us saying, oh, we'll beat them offensively, we need to kind of take care of that first.
Yeah. And you mentioned there about the expansive football and whether we would see it or not. It's also important to remember as well that we're kind of in a fight with Poland at the moment to make sure that we are not the like dead last finisher, so that we do have a slightly easier route when it does come to the playoffs. So at the moment, I think our goal difference is slightly better than theirs by 3 goals. And that's going to be something, and it's something Eileen did mention in the press conference whenever she mentioned the squad. She was like, we also have to have that in the back of our minds, because it might be a case of, okay, we're not going out to win necessarily because we know the opposition we're up against, but a point or holding them to very limited scores could be massively important over these two games. So we might go back to seeing that conservative style of football that, it's not always our favourite, but it has gotten us places.
Yeah, conservative. It's, you know, it's horses for courses. They're well ahead of us in the rankings for a reason, in terms of how long football has been developed in those countries, how much more players they have regularly playing at top clubs. Like, the gulf in class is there for a reason. The gulf in rankings is there for a reason. So it's not that we're saying being negative. It's playing to your strengths against an opposition that, you know, they're technically better than us. So how do we counteract that? That's just good game management. And I'm actually really happy that she acknowledged that in the press conference, because, you know, we all got a bit excited after qualifying for the World Cup. And obviously the Nations League B league was, you know, it was a good refresh, kind of fresh start for everyone. And now it's back to the dose of reality. And that is, we need to qualify for the Euros, and we need to, that's the momentum we need to keep. It's ensuring that we're at these major tournaments and that we continue the growth in that way, because those are the things that will push us forward. And in order to do that, we have to be clever and put ourselves in the best possible position for that. So like you say, a point would be absolutely amazing. A 1-0 loss, equally very, not like, we sound really negative now, we take it off, but that's the reality of it. Like, that's being clever about it. That's ensuring that we give ourselves the best chance. And that's international football.
Well, I think we've said from the start, like, once we've seen this group, we knew what we were heading into, and we maybe had a bit of positivity around the Sweden games just because we have a game in recent memory where we've done okay against them.
Yes.
But we we've been quite realistic all the way through. We've known what we're up against, and we've always known that we're aiming for that playoff spot rather than the, you know, get qualifying in the top two of this group. I mean, if we did that, it would be the most sensational moment in Irish football ever seen, considering the levels of opposition that we're up against. You mentioned early the big hole that's going to be in the team. Kaney McCabe, not there. We've had the added advantage that it wasn't like she got an injury in the last couple of days. We've had a while to plan for this after the yellow card in the last round of fixtures. What do you do to mitigate the loss of her impact in the team?
I think you go to a back four. I think you revisit Megan Campbell as a left back. So again, we've got a natural left-sided player over there who's really defensively strong. And potentially you have Izzy Atkinson. She's there as well as a possibility. Like we said, if we needed to change in game, if Megan's not quite there for 90 minutes, can we then convert to a wing back situation if we needed to bring on a centre back? Because that is one area of the pitch where we do have plenty of cover, you know, and we're very, very strong in that area. So I think that that's fine, particularly for the type of game that we're playing. Katie brings us a lot in defence and also attack, but we're not going to be attacking a huge amount. So if we can get someone in who is as equally good defensively as Katie, then, you know, it's not the big disaster that it might be, might have been made out to be. You know, it's not going to be that type of game where we can see a masterclass from Katie and she's going to be foraying up the wing anyway, or we would have played her in the 10. We definitely would have played her in a defensive left back, left wing back position anyway. So I think obviously it would be a bigger loss if it was a game that we were going out and we absolutely had to win, because if we have to win, we have to score a goal. And I think that that's still the big kind of question for us is, can we get a goal? And where does that come from? But I'm not overly concerned about that in these two games.
This is it. The legendary live band, Fish, returns to the road this summer. Fish. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, Ruoff Music Center. On sale now at LiveNation.com. Part of the Coors Light Concert Series.
I'm going to have people with torches and pitchforks outside my door with this next question. But anyways, here we go. There's been an argument out there that the last couple of games Katie has played in a green jersey, not her best in the green jersey. And I think a lot of people would say that. And that's not to take away from the general quality of player that we know she is, obviously. And she's always going to get more attention on her because of who she is. Is there a world where this is beneficial to her and beneficial to the team? Because there was moments in some of the last games where maybe there was a pass on or something that she didn't see and didn't pass it off on time. And there was an opportunity lost, whereas this is an opportunity for someone to, as you say, take a step up. And it's an opportunity for Katie to sit there, get really frustrated at not being on the pitch, and then come out in the France game and get a bit more of that spark that we're used to seeing from her.
Yeah, that's the absolute ideal scenario, really, isn't it? That we see someone else step up into the leadership role, someone else take responsibility, and we're not just funneling all our play through Katie. I can understand why there was a dip in form and frustration. You know, we've changed managers, we've changed styles of play. There's been new combinations, and it's not that easy. And we always look to Katie, and like you say, maybe stray passes that we're not used to seeing. And it looked like it was coming from a place of frustration, which could equally have been coming from a place of fatigue, given the schedule that she's had. I think it would be good for the squad as a whole that we're looking to someone else. You know, I think that there is too much focus around Katie. It's almost like our version of the Ronaldo effect, you know. It's someone who we would never, ever, ever take off, no matter how she's playing and stuff like that. And this is an opportunity to see how we cope without her. And then we say, okay, we coped quite well. Now do we find maybe a little bit of a different role for Katie in the team, where she can go out and be a little bit less burdened, because sometimes I feel like that's it. So she feels she has to do too much.
Her and Denise, again, you see it because from a lot. They both feel like they have to do everything.
Because of who she is. Exactly. And it's because of who she is and how much we talk about her and how much we laud her. And that's because they are both world-class players, and rightly so. We should be talking them up, and I always say that. But yeah, I think you're right in that if we see that we can play and compete without her, then we can definitely look at, okay, well, now let's get the best out of her. Let's see where is best, because we can survive, you know, we can survive without her. There's this thing where, God, what will we do without her? And I think that would be good for the squad and hopefully good for her as well.
I really hope this is what we're saying when like 10 o'clock-ish rolls around on Friday evening and the game is over and it's not a 7-0 defeat or something.
I don't think so. I don't see that for us. I don't
see it either off the basis of how we have performed. I suppose this is just a great unknown for us because...
And you forget, it's still England. Like, you still want to go out and you still want to, like, get stuck in. I mean, everyone, it's an opportunity for another person to get, like, you're getting to play against England.
Yeah.
Go out and absolute nail someone, make an impression, you know, like, put your name up for a starting place and making the squad more competitive and stuff like that. And yeah, giving Eileen some food for thought.
Under the bright lights of nice Carrow Road.
Yeah, I do think we can be a little bit nice at times. I know we talk about being physical, but I think there's a bit more of that in us. And I'd like to see us get more of that into our play, not in the way that Katie has with, like, silly little yellow cards here. If you're getting a yellow card, make it worth your while.
Yeah, definitely. And especially if it means you're going to miss a fairly pivotal game. Talking about different positions that we're going to have to fill, I asked last night for a couple of people on our Koi Gig podcast or post at the Koi Gig Pod on Twitter if you want to ever get in touch with us for just general questions that they had going into this game. And one thing that came up was Kira Carusa not being there. So Alice Collett, who's a regular listener, but Kira's forced absence, does this mean we finally see a shakeup of the attack? And then Laura Brady, kind of something along similar lines, with Kiernan now fit again and in good form, do you see a change to the attacking approach, or do we still play a nine that can hold up play and then have Liam playing either a wing or on a wing or as a second forward? I know you've said before that you always like Leanne with an extra person in there to play off.
Yeah, I think so. I think it, although she's very good at chasing balls as well. And we saw that that could be effective for us when we did have Heather playing in that position as well. I mean, it's a tough one. It's really hard for the midfield if you don't have someone who can hold up play. But again, you just adapt your style. Instead of like balls to feet, you play balls down the channel. Leanne gets there, then she has the ball at her feet. It's not just about hold up play. It's just about being clever and killing a few seconds so that your midfield and your wingers do have time to get up and support. So she can certainly play that role. I wouldn't be overly worried about that, particularly if when we have Denise back. Wouldn't mind seeing Denise in the more advanced role, maybe in the 10, because we know she'll do her work defensively, but the amount of opportunity we're going to have to get some link up play is going to be few and far between. And you want someone who's very comfortable in that position and can form relationships really easy. And we see that Denise kind of has that in her locker and is brilliant at making third man runs as well. And she might be the person who has to run the channels the odd time as well. And we know that she has the fitness to do that. So again, do I think it would be better if we had someone who could do hold up play? Yes. Do we have someone in the squad like that? Probably not. So again, it's a challenge for Eileen to be more adaptable. And to be fair to Kira, a lot of the balls she was getting in the more recent games as well were those long kind of spraying passes, Caitlin Hayes, where she has had to chase. And we saw her getting caught offside a few times and stuff like that. So if that's the pressure you're under and those are the balls you're going to be playing out, which you will be, there's no getting away from playing those long balls, then yeah, someone with pace who can, you know, frighten players, I think, is a very good option. So look, it's not ideal to not have two regular starters when, you know, you're really trying to bed down your new systems, your new identities and stuff like that. But again, does it give an opportunity? We're trying to be optimistic here. Glass half full. Opportunity to try something new.
Well, I saw on Kira's Instagram that she seemed to be on a lake or something somewhere, sunning herself, but not in rainy Dublin. So I was like, fair play. She's having a nice week. Hopefully we'll have some nice results to send back to her while she recovers from that injury. I wanted to ask you about one of the, I say new additions, but it's a new old addition to the squad, and that is your good friend, Julianne Russell, getting back in there after being out for so long, having a baby, coming back to fitness, everything she's doing with Galway this year, you know, a name that's constantly being brought up in conversations around the league. What's it like to watch a player like that, and a friend like that too, come through all of that and now make it back into the national squad?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously so proud of Julianne, and it's deserved, you know. And yeah, like you say, oh, it's a surprise, but you have someone who's in unbelievably good form, who's flying fit, who can fill a role on a wing where it's a really, really, really tough slog sometimes in the system that we play, and who has 60 caps. You know, it's not like you're plucking someone off the street. And sometimes I'm always saying, yeah, it's brilliant, get the young players in, give them game time. But sometimes you have to think about the dynamic of the squad as well, and more leaders stepping up. And like when Katie wasn't having her best game, was there a little bit of a notable lack of just cohesion there, and having just someone like her and her personality that she brings to the squad? She's so good at bonding people. She's such a like bright personality. I think it'll be brilliant, not just to have her talents, but to have her in and around the squad. And she's someone that people can look up to as well. I mean, she's a mother. She's back to work. She's gotten herself in the shape for life, has run marathons. She's a prime example of what you can do if you put your mind to it and you're focused. And sometimes people get ahead of themselves. They sign here, there, and everywhere, but it all boils down to hard work at the end of the day if the girls are going to improve. And she epitomizes that for me. So I just think it's just fantastic. And yeah, couldn't be more proud to have seen her name go back there. And the fact that it's so deserved is brilliant as well.
Mm. And I think it's interesting in the context of the league as well, because like, as you said there, generally when we're looking at players that might be coming from the league into the national setup, it is always younger players. You know, we're not looking at the players that are maybe in their late 20s, mm-hmm. early 30s, and thinking that you can get back into the squad, or, you know, this is going to be a place that you can go to. So I think even from that perspective, it made me reconsider the way I look at the league, I suppose.
Which is brilliant, because I think you're right. I think it's the stepping stone. Everyone's, oh, it's a stepping stone till you go pro. It's this, that, and the other. And there's some people, again, like I've said it before, who don't peak until they're 22, 23. And it's almost like they've been dismissed by that point because they haven't gone professional. And this is proof then that you can make it at any age, but also that you shouldn't stop trying to improve at any age. Obviously, there are the reports that we're bringing in this under 23 setup, which I think is long overdue. And hopefully that, combined with Julianne's selection, can kind of buoy people who are gone beyond the under 19 age group, who kind of are comfortable in the league, and rather than pushing themselves to make it to the next level because they think their opportunity has passed, I'm hoping that it's a cause for motivation for them, and yeah, we can see more and more people pushing themselves personally to try and make those improvements and make themselves better. That'll in turn make the league better. And then, yeah, maybe they will go pro at 24, 25, but they'll probably be more ready at that point to go and make an impression, because they've had to slog it out, they've had to adapt, and they've had to take disappointments, and they're probably a more rounded character.
I think something we've seen, it's slightly different, but with a player like Caitlin Hayes coming into the national setup, again, who's someone who's coming in, is that little bit older, has a bit more experience, obviously has been playing at a high level when it comes to club, but just couldn't get into the national setup until now. And the maturity that she's brought to her play, the maturity that she's brought to the team, it already feels like she has that bit of leadership in that back line, that, you know, she's not afraid to use her voice whenever she speaks to the media, again, it's very clear that she has a clear sense of self. So there's definitely a good case to be made for, as you say, having that under 23 set up. Eileen was asked about it at the press conference for the squad announcement, and she obviously gave the normal speech about why it's a good thing and why they want to bring it in, basically all the reasons that you said there, but was also very hesitant to give any sort of timeline for it.
Yeah, that's really annoyed me.
Yeah, and also got a little bit annoyed as well when she was kind of pushed on the timeline, and Gareth, who's the communications officer, was like, you know, nothing has been set in stone. But it was a bit frustrating listening to it and going, well, are we looking 6 months, 6 years, you know, what's the time frame? Because it feels like now is the time that we need to jump on that momentum that you mentioned before of the World Cup, hopefully qualifying for Euros, and, you know, building all those pathways so that we have stronger teams and we can keep qualifying for major tournaments.
Yeah, and it's not like the formula for it hasn't been tried and tested. We've always, like, for the number of years, the home base sessions were stepped up. It's just putting an age group on it and going out and deciding who should be selected and, you know, just giving players a chance like that. And the under-19s are about to go out to the Euros. Okay, so this is the prime age group that when they come back, they need the motivation, they need the visibility to see, yes, I'm going to keep going here, I'm going to keep improving. But maybe they're not going to go professional straight away after they do their leaving cert. Maybe they're a little bit in between. Maybe they need to improve a little bit more before they take that step. And they're going to be coming from such an elite phase and playing at such a high standard. They're going to want to stay there, and they're going to be so motivated to do that. And if we give them one training a week when they come back, like, I don't understand why it needs to be in a plan and not in action. Mm. Now,
especially it's when obviously those home-based sessions aren't happening anymore either. So,
yeah, I get it. The FAI has no money, the finances, this, that, and the other. But there's so many really qualified coaches within the FAI. There's so many roles there that, you know, you and I won't be familiar with, that people who are qualified coaches work in different roles within there. It doesn't have to be the same trainer every time. You just need to have a bit of guidance from the senior team to see what they want to get out of this, pass that information on to these brilliant coaches who are around, and do a bit of work on the scouting. And maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but until they give us answers as to why it's taken so long, I think you're within your right to be a bit annoyed by that that response, and for us to be questioning why it's going to take so long.
Well, and also with the way that Irish football is going, there's an argument to be made that, like, the women are going to be selling out the Aviva, and more people are going to be attracted to go and watch them, considering the caliber of player that's there, than the men's team at the moment. Now, that might all change if after, what is it now, nearly 300 days, and they finally get a manager. But, you know, I think the money obviously has to be put into it, but there's a lot of investments. There's a lot of return on investment there for the squad if they do that. But again, we have seen it countless times in women's football, even over the last couple of weeks, where people just haven't seen that. Or else you get someone like Michelle Kang, who comes into London City Lionesses, and all of a sudden Aslani is playing in the Championship, and you have like a Champions League level manager coaching, you know, Ruscha Littlejohn and stuff, and you're like, this is a very strange thing to happen. That's probably a bit mean to Ruscha, I shouldn't say that, but you know what I mean. It's very different calibers in terms of where they are currently in their career. So nail your colours to the mast then. England, Ireland, Carrow Road, 8 o'clock on Friday. Lots of build up and off the ball across the week, but how's it going to end?
I think a narrow loss, but I think that we will have a better first half than we did in the Aviva. I think that the pressure is all on England now. They're going to have the big home crowd. Ireland should go in seeing it as an opportunity to annoy that crowd and to frustrate them. And I would go in and I'd like to see them being clever and nasty and slow the game down and do their best to frustrate England. I think that would be really good. I think that's our best course of action there. And I think it can be done. Obviously, they're mostly are all out of season now as well. So I think now is a great opportunity to do that. So I think obviously based off just seeing the quality that they had in that home game, it's hard to envisage anything other than an England win. But yeah, I don't feel overly daunted by it either, because hopefully there was a lot of learnings from that.
Fingers crossed. I think you're right, but I'm afraid to say that as well, and then it will turn around and not be what I want it to be.
This is it. The legendary live band, Fish, returns to the road this summer. Fish. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, Ruoff Music Center. On sale now at livenation.com. Part of the Coors Light Concert Series.
Speaking of some of those English players, before we go, we just wanted to do a quick transfer roundup, because there has been quite a lot of action in the WSL. Latest out of Manchester United today was reports that they have triggered Nikita Paris's extension, which means she can still leave, and it does still seem like there's a lot of interest in her, but just someone will have to pay a fee. United, I don't know where to start with them, Karen, in terms of who they've already let go. We've seen Mary Earps go, Katie Zellum, Natia Garcia, you know, all fairly regular names on the team sheet, and absolutely no one coming the other way that is A, notable, or B, I actually don't even think they've bring in anyone at all. I think maybe some of the younger
Dominique Janssen.
Yes, you're right.
And I think she's a good signing, but again, she's been around for a long, long time. Not the marquee signing that you would say is going to excite the fans, particularly when you see who's gone the other way. We always said that the depth in United squad is nowhere near in terms of competing, and now it's even more depleted. And with all the reports of, you know, the women being moved to the prefabs, and, you know, the
restructures. Well, if you're a player looking at all that going on, you're like, I don't want to go there. Why would I go there?
And just how... I just think the management of it has been so bad. Okay, they're triggering Nikita Paris's extension so that they might get a fee for her, or they might keep her. But like, they didn't have the foresight to do something similar with Mary Earps or Alessia Russo. And it just again feels like they're very much on the back burner, and that the ambition of the girls and the club are not quite aligned, I would say. Even leaving Katie Zellum go, at least she kind of...
Well, she defined what United
defined
was.
Defined the spirit of the club. You know, they had... I kind of said, United don't really have a personality when they play, but at least the players, you felt like they were giving it their all, and, you know, they were working hard for the team. And if you lose someone like that who has kind of been the spirit of it for so long and has seen them through from, you know, the inception right the way through to their promotion and, you know, fighting to get into the top path and become the big club that they should be, to just leave and kind of with a whimper and no notable signings to replace. I just think it's a bad sign.
It doesn't seem particularly positive, anything out of the club, in terms of Jim Ratcliffe's comments about the fact he's been in there for 6 months, hasn't thought about the women's team at all. The Porta Cabins, as you said, that the team are going to be in, the lack of signings in, the lack of clarity on the ones that are going out. You know, someone like Katie Zellum, you want to give her a send-off match, at the very least, you would think, after being with the club for so long. Maybe you'll get lucky and Casey Stoney will just fly back in after her, what seems like...
And bring about 12 players with her?
Yeah.
That'd be great, yeah.
After what seems like a fairly unfair way, shall we say, to get rid of her over in San Diego. Don't know what was going on there, but there seems to be a lot of issues both on the pitch and off the pitch there with the club. In terms of other clubs that are not doing too badly for themselves, we have the little matter of Vivian Miedema going to Manchester City.
You okay, hon?
I'm not good. Won't lie. I got the news embargoed the night before it happened, and all the photographs came through of her in the jersey. And it was just like, a little terror in my heart. I was like, no, this is so wrong. And I have this thing about seeing Arsenal players in blue. It happened, you know, with Fabregas at Chelsea. I could get over him going to Barcelona. Chelsea, no, it was just too upsetting. You know, Nasri, too upsetting. So whenever I see an Arsenal player wearing the colour blue, it just, it gets to a different part of my heart. But, I mean, what an attack City are going to have next year if they can find a way to play Miedema, which she might actually like getting that more creative role, because we've seen that's the role that she wanted to play at Arsenal, and then have Bunny Shaw just firing in goals left, right and centre.
Yeah, I think Taylor is more open to building his style around his players as opposed to the opposite way as well. So I feel like he'll find a way to get the best out of her if she can get back to that form. And based on her comments and her interview, it sounds like she feels like if she can get that fitness back, that the best is yet to come. And you have to agree, because I'm still looking at her and it's like Vivian Miedema at 27. I was like, God,
she's so young.
What were Arsenal doing? You know, there's, and City were so good to watch last year, and they were just pipped because Chelsea were Chelsea. And obviously there's going to be a bit of an adapting period there, you'd kind of hope, even though some of their signings have been quite impressive as well. But yeah, that's a huge, huge boost for City. Now, Arsenal, you know, they've made a couple of signings as well, which I think you can get excited about. But I think it'll be really interesting to see how she fits into that team.
Yeah, I like Caldente is obviously a really exciting signing for Arsenal, but I really wish they had got Mary Earps or someone in as a goalkeeper.
I'm surprised that wasn't their push the boat out, or put everything on the
Courtney
table.
Brosnan, if you want to come to Arsenal, wouldn't say no.
Signed a new contract though, didn't you?
I know. Which again, I found strange, because I thought, I can understand why you might not want to go to United, but you know, I feel like there would be the potential there. But she seems to really like Everton, and even when we were kind of going through that period when she first came into the Ireland squad and there was a few mistakes in her game, she always credited the coaches at Everton for being the ones that taught her a lot around that time. So you can't really dig someone down for having loyalty to a club that has got them to a level like that.
I know, we spoke about United kind of just leaving their players all go. What's going on at West Ham?
I don't know. It's a mass exodus.
Like, good players as well.
Who do you think is the most damaging that's left?
I think Shimizu was like, she played every single game for them last year.
Sissoko too.
Sissoko, just because she was great crack. Hayashi, you know,
well, it's all people who were pretty much
starters. Yeah. And Mackenzie Arnold, obviously, she's been there for.
I think Mackenzie Arnold,
she's captain.
Yeah, hers seemed more like a choice on her side.
I think
a lot of the posts that I was seeing, you know, and even the way she talked about it being a really difficult decision for her.
Well, she's obviously seen the exodus as well, and kind of not seeing any cause for excitement to stay. That it's like this really exciting rebuild that might happen, and she'd get to captain that out. And I think that's the most telling one, that she decided to. The other ones, okay, if they were club decisions, grand, but obviously club decisions that have rattled her a little bit so much that they've made her leave.
All those, how many was it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All six of those ones anyway. So Arnold, Sissoko, Hayashi, Shimizu, Snurl and Abby Lee Stringer. That all happened on the 30th June. So obviously that was the day that all their contracts went out. And normally when you see those released lists, it's like a couple of maybe younger players that are going on somewhere. There might be one big name in there, but it'd be very, very unusual unless there's something seriously wrong at the club level to see six players that are basically, well, five at least are starters there, all going.
Yeah. It doesn't bode well, does it?
No, not particularly. And then one of the big storylines of the summer, which hasn't actually happened yet, but looks very close to happening, is Lucy Bronze to Chelsea after leaving Barcelona. It's kind of some like weird stuff out of Barcelona where it doesn't feel like she maybe necessarily wanted to go, but the club weren't totally keen on keeping her. I mean, every time you see Chelsea do a transfer window, it's just terrifying. the sort of caliber player. But I suppose, again, Lucy Bronze now is maybe not the Lucy Bronze that she was a couple of years ago, but she still was able to keep her spot in that Barcelona team. That's pretty impressive.
Starter for Barcelona means that you're pretty much a nailed on starter for any club team in the world. Guaranteed starter for England, who are one of the top three teams in the world. She's world class. So yeah, it's strange that Barcelona would have wanted her to go, but again, Chelsea just
hoover up all the talent.
A gift horse in the mouth like that's probably a no-brainer for them, really. If she wanted to come back to England and Man City weren't maybe willing to stump up.
I feel like she would fit in well at Arsenal, though, as well. But maybe they didn't want to stump up either. I just feel like
just signed Fox, I guess, so you have to maybe invest in her.
I know. It's just that Lucy Bronze is so much more nailed on, and she has that defensive solidity that Arsenal often miss. I know, you know, the likes of Lotwin Mooy did step up a lot more last season, and having Leah Williamson back in the squad was massive, but I just...
But I think it was a lesson when Williamson was out that they needed more solid cover there, potentially, and they needed another leader.
I also just think that Bronze has that sort of almost Katie McCabe-esque characteristic where she isn't afraid to get stuck in.
She has an aura.
Yeah, she has a bit of an aura, and I think Arsenal needs a few more players like that. I'm not saying the rest of them are soft, but sometimes you're like, come on, get in there a little bit more. Just don't do your ACL while you're at it.
Yeah.
In terms of just some other random ones that have happened around the league, you had Fran Kirby announcing that she was going to Brighton, so she's not going all that far. Chelsea also signed Sandy Baltimore, 24-year-old from France, who's really, really exciting. Watched a lot of her play when she was 18, 19, and very much tipped to be one of the better French players going forward. Gretchen Bach as well from the France side. She went from Lyon to PSG. So there's been actually quite a lot of movement in the French league between different players going between those two sides. Hannah Benenson left Everton, gone to Juventus. Kind of disappointing time, I have to say, at Everton. I expected a little bit more for her, but it just didn't ever really get off for her. Chawinga as well. She's gone from Wuhan, one of the Chinese clubs, to Lyon. One of those really impressive players that we've seen on an international level, but obviously not so much on a club level because of playing in China. Angeldal leaving City. You have Mary Earps obviously going to PSG. And yeah, I mean, there's still plenty of time in the transfer window, so still plenty more action to happen. And we will be back to do all of that and a bit more of a build-up to the France game next week. Down in Cork, you get to go to the home of Denise O'Sullivan and Megan Connolly and many other great Irish footballers, which will be very fun. Are you going to be making the trek down to Parky Cueve?
Well, sure, I suppose I'll have to.
Oh, I suppose.
The People's Republic, they'll have me. They might have me now because they bet us at the weekend.
Well,
so
I wasn't going to mention
it. No issues with us.
You did bring it up yourself, so not my fault. I was going to give you a free pass considering the week that's
There's
in
no
it.
No free passes. I don't deserve a free pass.
Well, I'm very sorry for your troubles. Hopefully the Ireland team don't add to it on Friday. We'll be back. We'll have more Koi Gig before the France game and also looking back on the England game. I will also be over in Arch, so keep an eye on Off the Ball's channels because there'll be match day minus one press conferences and then interviews with Eileen Gleeson and a couple of the players going live as well afterwards. But for now, thank you very much for listening. The Koi Gig pod on Off the Ball is sponsored by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. We will chat to you all very, very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
This is it. The legendary live band, Fish, returns to the road this summer. Fish. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, Ruoff Music Center. On sale now at livenation.com. Part of the Coors Light Concert Series.